Hey everyone, I'm Jonathan Kuzbowski, and this is a Blind Entrepreneurship bonus episode brought to you by Penji, a podcast that helps entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision to profitability. This week's episode is from Penji Masterclass series that is labeled Breaking Barriers in a Male-Dominated Industry, and is from Rupali from Lotus STEM and Steliana from Global Women in Tech. And both of these women will talk about breaking barriers in a male-dominated industry. And as a male myself, I can say that it was an eye-opener, because a lot of times you don't really realize the perceptions that men have in the workplace. I know you read about it, especially nowadays, you read about it more so than ever before. But I think it's just a good reminder to be able to just understand what's going on, how others feel the empathy towards others. Be more acclimated with yourself and as a man, what you say and what you do and the impact that it has on other people. But I hope you enjoy this episode. As always, please reach out at any time. If you have any questions or if you love this type of content, we'd love to produce more of it, but I don't know about it unless you talk to us. So head over to tbeshow.com and drop a comment on this week's episode. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody, and have a great rest of your day. Enjoy.
Hopefully everyone can see and hear us. So thank you all for joining us on today's Penji Masterclass. Our topic for today is breaking barriers in a male-dominated industry. My name is Sakina. I'm the Director of Partnerships here at Penji, and I'll also be the moderator of our panel this morning. My guests today are Rupali and Steliana, and I will let them further introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about what they do. Before we get started, though, this webinar is brought to you by Penji, which is easy and effective unlimited graphic design service, but don't take my word for it. We will be including a link in the description to find out more about how to use Penji and how some of our clients have used it in the past. So Rupali, you want to start and tell people who you are and what you do?
Sure. Hi guys, my name is Rupali Chaudhary. I am the founder and CEO of a nonprofit called Lotus STEM, which is a networking and leadership platform for South Asian women in science, technology, engineering, math, and medicine. My educational background, I have a PhD in molecular cellular biology, and then I did a three-year postdoc in immunology looking at food allergies. And Lotus STEM is kind of my brain baby in trying to find a more supportive environment based off a lot of personal experience as a South Asian woman living outside of South Asia and trying to find mentorship for, based off the topic that we have today, trying to make it in a male-dominated field.
Yeah, thank you, Rupali. Steliana?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. So my name is Steliana. I'm based in Bucharest, Romania. My job is head of marketing and digital transformation for a banking group. Besides this, I am a board member and head of marketing for a local nonprofit, which is called Global Women in Technology. It's a nonprofit that brings together women working in the STEM field from Romania, but also from abroad, with the mission to empower women and provide support, mentorship, and projects for women working in STEM to further grow their career here. I also am very fond of working with students and working with the local university. And I'm a board member in an organization called UniHub, which is an organization led by the University of Bucharest. And its mission is to help students become entrepreneurs. My background is mixed in the sense, academic background is mixed in the sense that I have both technical and humanistic degrees. I'm currently pursuing a PhD in big data. And also I have a business management degree from the Maastricht School of Management.
Awesome. Awesome. So you shared a little bit about your academic background. Professionally, for both of you, how did you kind of get started in the tech industry, and how did you end up where you are today? Rupali?
Sure. So I actually started off with a mindset that I wanted to enter medicine and be a doctor. And I just yesterday, I met a friend of mine after 12 years who I've known since we first started high school. And she was just like, yep, what I remember about Rupali is she was going to be a neurosurgeon. And you know what? That was, at that time period in my life, that was the most important thing. But then when I started university in undergrad, I realized what research actually was. That was my first exposure to what scientific research would look like. My program was very research oriented, and I realized that was my niche. That's where I felt more comfortable. But that was still a hard sell for coming from a background where in society, where engineering and being a doctor is kind of the go-to career choices. It was a really hard sell to go in and say, no, actually what I want to do is do research. And what I want to do is do my PhD. And who knows, maybe be a professor one day. And it was the journey that I took was not a straight line. It was a very, I changed fields after every degree. I stayed within biology, but I changed fields within biology after every degree. I changed what my research was after every degree. I really pushed myself to try and learn something new every single time, but that didn't come with its own challenges. Where I am now running an organization, it's of there were I would say all of my academic background, all the translational skills that I developed during postgraduate studies and then my postdoc and being a sessional professor is really coming handy now as I run an organization. So I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of like the trajectory of how you got to where you are today. And you talked about how in your culture, it's the go-to to be in engineering or in medicine. So when you took those different paths, how did your like family or friends react to that? Or were they like kind of worried about you? Like, what is she doing? What was kind of the reaction from them?
Oh yeah. To give a little bit of background, I was the first in my family to move away from home for school. That was a big deal. Coming from an immigrant Indian household where a lot of the mentality was that the girl should stay at home until she got married. My parents were like, no, go do what you want to at the school that you want to do it at. But that still came with a lot of stress and burden that I put on myself, that I have to be successful no matter what. Mm-hmm. And what that success actually looked like was me getting into medicine, because that was kind of the story that I had been telling everyone for my whole life. When I started university and I decided to change that trajectory, when I did go back and tell my parents, this is what I wanted to do, it was met with a lot of apprehension because my family, there's no one in my family who had done the research field. I come from a family of engineers and businessmen. It is very different to say, I'm now going to do postgraduate studies. And they're like, we have no idea how we can guide you in this. We have no idea what your life is going to look like. We don't know if this is going to be a successful trajectory for you. And especially coming from an immigrant community, that success is very important. My parents did give up their lives to move here to make sure their kids were well settled. And that was met with a certain level of apprehension whether or not I'd be settled in that aspect. So yeah, it was hard and always being kind of choosing the path that was less traveled with my family. I couldn't go to my siblings, my older sibling, and be like, I need help in picking what I do next. Right. I need help with mentorship. How do I go find a job in this? I didn't necessarily have that. I had to learn that on my own.
Gotcha. And Stiliana, for you, what was kind of your journey to get to where you are now in the marketing field?
Yes. So my journey is actually mixed. It's really interesting that Rupali mentioned about her family, and I think it's very important the influence our family has in our lives. And I think it's important to mention that I'm the daughter of a single mother, which gave me a lot of empowerment and independence from a very young age. So having this very strong role model in my life. And then I actually started mixing the communication skills with the technology by chance, actually. When I was in college, in university, I was studying communication and public relations, and I've applied for the Ministry of Communication for a job there. So this was the first contact I had with technology, and I was very fortunate to start working from a very early age on e-government projects, so how technology can help the administration to bring a better life for the citizens. And this opened my appetite, to say so, for technology. So starting from that role within the e-government project, I've grew mixing both the technology and the marketing skills. I've worked for one of the largest nonprofit organization in the world in the technology field, which is TechSoup. And then I've climbed up the corporate ladder, to say so, by becoming digital transformation officer at the group I'm working for. So I've tried to keep very close to my heart my main degree, which is in marketing and communication, but technology is something I've learned along the way, and it's something I want to keep learning about and see how can influence my career and the lives of others, because technology is going, if it's not already, part of every company development. Mm-hmm. So this is it. So I didn't start from a family with technological background, or my high school background is not in technology, but I developed it throughout my career, and I'm very fortunate to have had this opportunity.
Absolutely. So I want both of you to kind of share what some of the obstacles that you've had to face within your career. Historically, tech has been a male-dominated field. So with that, women are going to have to go through more obstacles than a man would. So can both of you talk about what some of those obstacles were for you and how you kind of hurdled past those? Rupali?
Sure. So I'll speak a little bit more on the academic side of STEM in itself, just broadening it out a little bit. When I was an undergraduate, I didn't feel out of place because there are almost equal number of women to men in an undergraduate field. I didn't necessarily feel as out of place even during my master's, but when I started my PhD, it became quite evident that the lab that I was in was very female dominated because we had a female minority PI who made it a point to make sure that she was giving opportunities mm-hmm. to women in the field. And I think a few years into my PhD is when I realized how different that was compared to many other labs. In our department or even within the university. By the time I reached postdoc, that's when it became the most evident that there really weren't as many female postdoctoral fellows in that department. It was hard to really, it was hard to be able to relate your issues because it wasn't something that was felt by the majority of the postdoctoral fellows. And then even going one level over, when you start looking at the professors, female professors are even lower. It's about, I think, at about 30% right now in terms of researchers and professors in universities, let alone minorities. So at that point is when it really became evident to me that there's a lot of barriers that are going to be coming my way. And what these barriers are going to look like is what I felt during my postdoc more than anything.
Mm-hmm. And Stiliana, for you, what were some of those obstacles?
Well, mine were mixed. I can totally relate with some experience that Rupali shared. And I also can add on my, both on the academic side on, and on the professional side, that being a woman and being the youngest in the room has been sometimes an obstacle, to say so, in the sense that I worked in companies where the let's say the dominant team was male. Now I work in financial services, which is a domain where male are predominant. And I would say the main obstacle was to make people understand that my gender or my age have nothing to do with my knowledge, with my professionalism, or with my determination to do the things right. It's been quite hard from time to time, but I've become very resilient, and I've learned not to take this kind of things very personal. I used to take this very personal, but with experience and with age, I've learned to leave this kind of situation behind and just make sure that everyone in the room understands that I'm the professional in my field, and I have as much to say as any other person, no matter the gender, type, or whatever.
Yeah. And you both are really passionate about mentorship for young women transitioning into the tech field. What advice would you give a young woman who is dealing with imposter syndrome in a space where she's the only one that looks like her? Rupali?
I actually talk about imposter syndrome quite often in a lot of my talks that I give. Imposter syndrome, for one thing, I think every person should realize imposter syndrome is there at every single level that you go into. Anything that is challenging, there is a certain level of imposter syndrome that tends to sit in, and women tend to have it more than men do. Mm-hmm. My advice to them is going to be, you need to keep your close team, your supporters, really close to you, and really listen to the compliments that they would give you, because we're very good at telling ourselves that we don't necessarily deserve to be. Or someone else tells us that, no, you do, because of XYZ reason, instead of giving an excuse, we need to sit with that and sit with that discomfort of hearing that, yes, you do deserve to be here, mm-hmm. for whatever the reason is. Could be because you provide valuable insight into something, and you will learn as you go further into the field. But you being there is just as important as every other person being there. There is a lot of value in listening really to those compliments and those points that others will tell you. And if you really feel out of place, ask someone. Tell someone to give you that compliment so you can sit there and kind of think about it and be like, yes, you know what? Very factually, if you make a list of what is a feeling and what is factually you do deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of internalize it.
Yeah. And Stiliana, what about for you? How would you give advice to someone dealing with imposter syndrome?
Well, I would advise something that I've learned along the way. First of all, try to acknowledge that feeling and to try to look it in perspective. Try not to be reactive about it. I find that it's you can cope better with it if I'm sharing with a friend or with a mentor of mine, because I also have mentors I work with. People with some more experience than you can reassure you that what you're feeling is normal from time to time, and knowing others have been in your position can make this feeling less scary. Also, I would definitely advise that make an exercise to accept that you have had some role in this success. What imposter syndrome refers to has many shades. It can be related with perfectionism, with being an expert in your field, or being the person who always gets it very easy. So just accept that you play a part, a very important part in having success in your profession, in your career. And with this thought, you are going to cope with that feeling even better. So this would be my lesson learned from my own experience, that I would definitely share it with the people I work with.
Yeah. So one of the things that also comes along with women breaking into male-dominated fields is making sure that we have a safe space, whether that's preventing harassment or whether that's preventing just overall disrespect or inappropriate comments, et cetera. How do you think that companies or employers can ensure that women are able to be safe at work? Rupali?
I think one of the foremost things is that we need to have more male allies to actually be listening to the concerns that women have. Many women shy away from reporting something, be it physical harassment or harassment that comes in any other forms, or microaggressions that are coming in any other forms, because they feel like they're not going to get hurt, because they feel like they don't want to create a scene, or they don't want to create a situation where others are given this upper hand to make a decision about whether or not they're capable of doing their job, or if they're just being too sensitive, is what a lot of women tend to hear. Yeah. So in that case, we really need some male allies to stand by the women, not to speak for the women, that there's a difference. You're an ally, you're not a savior, you're not there to try and come and speak and say what the woman wants to be told, but you need to be there for support. And if the woman is not being heard, you need to create a situation where the woman will get heard then. And I think the more male allies we start to have, the more policy changes we can start to see in companies where they actually take these concerns a lot more seriously, and they'll start to implement changes in their own, how they're running their company. And we also need more women at that higher leadership level, so that representation is there. It's not just women who are on the ground level who are doing the day-to-day that are feeling these microaggressions. We need that voice up in the boardrooms. We need that voice up in the leadership where they can bring these concerns to the table, and then those males in that boardroom need to actually hear it and be concerned and think about it on a human level rather than just what is going to make us money.
Right, right. Those are really good points. Stiliana, what are your thoughts on this?
I would just like to build on something Rupali said about men being not giving us a voice. I've heard a lot of comments, both coming from women and men, that women don't have a voice, or women need to be given a voice. So I'm in a total disagreement with this kind of approach, because we do have a voice. We just need all the space and the partnerships to have this voice heard and used at the full power. So I totally believe in cooperation and bringing both men and the women at the same table in companies and organizations to help women empowerment. Then I truly believe in the necessity of having on building a company culture that provides a safe space for women. For example, my company, the one I currently work for, we have a diversity chart, and we have principles of work regarding diversity and how we should tackle both the women in management roles. And we have dedicated and a commitment to bring more women managers at the table. And we are successfully doing this. And also, I truly believe that companies can also provide a space for of networking and affinity groups. It is known that when women have like other role models in other women, it's easier to relate, it's easier to communicate and treat, and it's easier to actually have an impact on your colleagues' lives. So this would be, in my opinion, the most important ones. Build a culture of diversity and integration at all levels. Have all the people and all the team on board with this, and try to not think of women empowerment as something that we don't have, but something we need to build on and just strengthen all the advantages we have and everything we can bring at the table.
Mm-hmm. Were there any mistakes that either of you made maybe early on in your career that you learned a great lesson from? And when you first joined maybe the team or maybe your PhD program, Rupali, like you said, did you find yourself trying to acclimate to the environment that may have been male dominated, or were you kind of comfortable within who you are?
Oh, no, I definitely did. There are mistakes that I've made. I'm human. We all make mistakes. We all learn from them. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. I do remember when I started my PhD program, I had this mindset that beauty and brains don't go together. And mm-hmm. so what a scientist is supposed to look like versus what I look like. So I tried to change and fit in that very stereotypical mindset of absent-minded, not caring about how you look, kind of visual of a scientist. But then also, I also fell into this trap of believing that a scientist should only be passionate about their project and nothing else in life. Mm-hmm. And so even though I had lots of hobbies, it was the science that needed to take precedent over everything else in my life. And so I kept pushing things that may have been important, but I didn't think it fit that idealistic mindset of what a scientist should be. But that's changed over time. Like now there's hashtags of like, who a scientist is supposed to be. So like scientists who selfie is a huge movement that started to happen mm-hmm. around the world to show that there are different types of scientists and they look different and it's okay to be interested in fashion or be interested in makeup and be interested in doing art at the same time. And that doesn't negate how good of a scientist you are. Mm-hmm. So that's been a lesson I've had to learn over the course of my academic career.
Yeah. And Stiliana, what about for you? Mistakes that you made early on and what lessons you learned from them?
I can think about two actually at this point. And one of them is that when I first had my first manager role, I was in a mood of dictate, not manage. So because I wanted to prove myself so much, I've tended in the team I've led at that time to actually believe I'm the technically strongest person in that team. So whenever the team was doing something or coming up with solutions and I had another idea or a better vision or something, I would just simply jump over them and say, you need to do that. Of course, this alienated them, removed any sense of ownership or, you know, pride in their work, and ultimately hurt the project. So what I've learned the hard way is that in my profession, I should try to find the balance in the way I share with the people I work with my vision and try to empower them towards finding the best solutions. So this would be the first lesson learned, to manage not to dictate something. And the second lesson, I think it's about working unsustainably hard. I'm a person who really enjoys her job and who really enjoys being at work and doing her work. But at my early stages of my career, I had this crazy hours, and I was like the first to come, last to leave, investing a lot of my time in the work just to make sure I prove myself. Of course, this led to burnout. This led to being, you know, actually less efficient in my job. So what I've learned is that, okay, keep the pace and be a person who invest in her job, in my role, and be here for the team, but also try to balance everything, because otherwise the burnout feeling and the burnout sentiment is real and can actually damage you more than you believe.
Yeah.
So I think this would be the two most important lessons I've learned along the way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Rupali, I actually wanted you to add to that. How have you been able to find a balance between your career and your personal life?
Oh gosh, that's a learning curve.
Yeah.
I completely second what Stelliana said about burnout and unhealthy working habits. I was also very early on in my career, it was all about working hard, working long hours. Now I've switched over to working smart. It really is about when I make a schedule of when and how I'm going to be working during the day. And a lot of what I do now is being done independently. Running this organization, I don't necessarily have an office, so I work from home a lot of times, but I'm very conscious that if I am going to be working late one day, I need to balance that out with giving myself a break the next day, maybe starting a little bit later in the morning, just so I'm giving my body some time to rest. And that's been a hard lesson. My postdoc, actually, there were certain experiments that required me to work overnight, closer to like 26 hours continuously. And that was very unhealthy. I was in this mindset that I shouldn't be asking for help because I needed to prove myself, because X, Y, and Z in their early career had the ability to stay there overnight. Therefore, I should also be doing the same thing rather than asking for help. And I was commuting an hour to get to work. So that 26 hours in the lab plus an hour commute to and from was making a 28-hour day. Which is very unhealthy, and I refused to ask for help. And now I'm in a position, mentally in a position, where I've learned from that, and it's okay to say when you need help or you're vulnerable and you need someone to step in and be that aid for you. And that's another way that I've found that balance can happen. It's actually lean on your team, trust them a lot more. Not everyone is out to get you. The people that are close to you, that trust in your vision or trust in your product or trust in you as a human being, are going to be helping you out and are genuinely trying to help you. They're not necessarily trying to sabotage you. So that's a lesson I've had to learn over a period of time as well.
Stelliana, for you, you said that you were working really hard because you felt like you needed to prove yourself early on. Do you still feel that way?
Sometimes, yes. So actually transitioning in this new role I currently have, which is head of digital transformation, has kind of bringing back memories from the early career, because it's a role that requires a lot of both technical and management knowledge. And it's a role that has a great impact in the business and in changing the business I work for. So I can definitely see a tendency to immerse myself in work, but I'm taking the lessons I've learned so far, and I found instruments and tools that actually help me not to go back to that state of burnout. I lean a lot on my team. I delegate. I also try to invest in my personal relationship, you know, just make time for my friends, for the hobbies I have, and for the things that actually make who I am besides my job. So I'm trying to balance this new role this way, but because it's a new role and it requires so much from myself, I can understand I need to bring a lot to the table, but I'm not letting myself so immersed or 150% in the job as I used to.
Yeah. Can you both just leave us with like a takeaway or just a summarization of everything, or maybe like a piece of advice for a young woman that's breaking into a male dominated industry, where she should start or things she should do? Rupali?
Sorry, you froze for a second there.
Oh, okay. Just leave us with like a takeaway or a piece of advice for women entering into male dominated fields.
I think find a mentor early, but do not think that a mentor only has to be female. A mentor can also be a male mentor, and you can have more than one. You don't have to have just one mentor. And also realize that if a mentor is not helping you reach the goals and strides that you want to, it's okay to find another mentor and leave that mentor behind, because as life changes, as you grow, your needs and goals will change, and mentors are required to help you get to that specific goal. So I think mentorship is huge. Find someone. And it could be in person, multiple, four different aspects of your life, and be okay with having to leave a mentor behind. That doesn't mean you stop talking to them, but You don't have to view them as a mentor every single time. You can go and find another one. I think that's my biggest advice.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rupali. Steliana, what about for you? One takeaway.
Okay, I second what my colleague said, because it's something I took advantage of. Never shy away from asking help for a mentor. And something else is that I would advise, and I advise actually the young ladies I work with, is to always be a perpetual student, in the sense of always trying to prepare for everything you want to become to, and then try to add other skills and other improvements to what you already know. It's something that actually keeps you motivated and keeps you ahead of competition and ahead of the societal changes. So be a perpetual student, either in your profession or in your hobbies, to say so.
Absolutely. So I want to thank you both for joining me and sharing your insight. Can you both let people know where they can find your businesses, your organizations, and if they want to reach out to you personally, where they can reach you? Rupali?
Sure. So the organization is called Lotus STEM. That's with two M's. So you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. We're pretty much everywhere. and if you want to reach me personally, you can, I think all of Lotus STEM has a connection to all of my social media personally. Awesome. But you can find me on Twitter under CHAUDR8.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Rupali. Steliana, where can people find you?
So if they want to learn more about Global Women in Tech, they should simply search for the name of the organization, and it's really easily reachable on Facebook and LinkedIn. And if they want to reach out to me personally, I'm more than happy to reply both on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, where they can find me by just simply searching my name, which is Steliana Moraru. I think I'm the only one with this name, so I can easily reach.
So that makes it easier.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you both again for joining me. I'll also be tagging them in the description so you have all their contact information. So once again, this webinar was brought to you by Penji. We provide on-demand graphic design to businesses, startups, marketing teams, agencies, and more. So you can check us out at penji.co for more information about that. Also, the webinar will be available on our website as soon as next week and also on our Facebook page as well so that people can watch it later. So another thank you to my guests, Rupali and Stiliana, and to everyone else watching and listening. Have a safe and productive rest of your day.